This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. And tonight I have a guest, and what we're going to be talking about is probably what I consider to be one of the most important topics right now in personal finance, and that is medical insurance. What the heck is happening with medical insurance? Where is it going? It doesn't matter. You know, my guest is really, he provides medical insurance to a lot of the group coverage, a lot of self-employed, a lot of business owners, you know, seek them out, big companies and little companies, our company, and all the way up to a multi-million dollar radio conglomerate, you know, and construction companies and so forth. Seek them out for help on group medical insurance, but also the employees of those companies need to know what's going on, what's happening, what do you think's going to happen, what should we be thinking about in this area. So I want to introduce Richard Silverstein. Richard, it's good to have you tonight and here live in the station. That's great.
Good to be here.
Well, it's great.
I'm excited.
It's great to have you. You know, as I say, this is probably the most important topic. It's evolving in a rapid form and it's causing devastation. In my opinion, I just look at my own business, Richard. I can barely afford it hardly anymore.
Right, right. It is. I mean, it's a hot topic and it's a topic that needs to get fixed hopefully this year now that the election's over. I think a lot of stuff got kicked down the road until the election occurred,
you know,
from that standpoint.
And so, you know, right now the thing that's happening is the premiums are going up, but the deductibles are going through the roof. How does the average employee handle it? I mean, how do you live with it?
Right. Well, I think there's a couple things. One is if it's an employer-sponsored plan, what we see is deductibles are not as outrageous as if it's people getting it on their own. The deductibles now for people getting on their own are just unaffordable.
What are people getting it on their own? What do you consider? I mean, bad is it?
If somebody doesn't have an employer-sponsored plan, they have to go to the exchange to get individual coverage. And we see deductibles, you know, $3,000 to $6,000. It's pretty much catastrophic coverage. Now, the thing for those that are on the exchange is about 80% of them are getting some type of subsidy to lower that cost. But it's still a big hit. As I told you beforehand, it used to be that health insurance was a car payment. Now it's a mortgage from that standpoint. But we've seen now in the employer setting, deductibles are now over $1,000 on average for employees. So employers have definitely managed the cost by jacking up the deductibles for their employees.
But smaller company group plans like mine, I've got 20-some people. I mean, our deductibles are going through the roof right now. Is that true with a lot of the small employers also?
Yes. Yeah, what we see is for small employers, many of them, in order to manage the cost, have raised the deductible over the years. Larger companies, because the pricing is done differently and also it's a more competitive marketplace where some companies have to compete, they've been slower to really jack up the deductibles compared to small employers.
Now, do you deal with a lot of employers where you help to self-insure the plan? In other words, they're doing their own plan.
Right.
So they're not going through Care First. They're not going through United Healthcare. They're doing their own thing. You do that also for them.
We do, but a lot of those employers might use Care First or United or Aetna to be the claims payer and to get a network of doctors. But they basically are self-insuring the cost up to like $50,000 per claim. They go get what's called stop-loss insurance, catastrophic coverage. It's invisible to the employees. But we've seen more companies look to self-fund that are smaller because they basically say, I have a young, healthy workforce. Every year I'm getting rate increases, and I'm going to try to manage that better on my own.
So what size of an employer do you think makes any sense to consider self-insuring it? If a company like mine, 20, 25 people, and I'm putting out, I don't know, $60,000 a year or $70,000 a year, is it worth it to consider or even look at it?
Well, it's a complicated answer that we're probably not going to cover the
radio. I don't expect to ask you simple questions,
right,
Richard.
Right, but I would say that what we see for small employers, right, is that they're self-insuring by getting like a $2,500 deductible and then telling the employees they'll cover part of that deductible with what's called a health reimbursement account. So like what we did is we said to our employees, If you are up to date on age-appropriate screening, we're going to cover 40% of the deductible. If you're a non-smoker, you know, we'll cover 80% of the deductible. And so we see more small employer self-insuring part of the deductible, but not going full self-insurance. There are some state laws that passed that made it a little bit more onerous for smaller employers to self-insure. But we're seeing a lot of employers that are 75 to 150 that might not have taken that risk before. Now definitely looking at their options from that standpoint.
So in one of our next segments, not this segment right now, we're going to have to talk about health reimbursement, flexible spending, and then health savings accounts.
Okay.
So that's something we're going to be prepared for, okay?
Bring it on. We'll talk about that.
But
all great vehicles for your listeners to make sure that they take advantage of if they have a large out-of-pocket cost.
Absolutely. And but, you know, the other thing is for our small business owners, I work with a lot of small business owners, and my job is to figure out how to enhance things from a personal financial point of view.
Right.
I'm not working with the business, but I'm looking at the benefits. I'm looking at the pension plans. I'm looking at all kinds of different things saying, if you did this, this would enhance your personal well-being. What I see a lot of small business owners missing, though, is the health savings account.
Oh, definitely.
The health reimbursement account is wonderful for certain employees and certain companies, but the owner should be looking at the health savings account if they can figure out how to do that and make it all work. But we're going to have to talk about that next time. But right now, our focus is that the ACA, in my opinion, this is my opinion, okay, we're almost out of time for this segment. I believe Barack Obama put the ACA in merely to screw the healthcare system up so bad that there was nothing left but a government takeover.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think Hillary tried to do that when Bill got elected. The goal was to go to national health and health care reform. I think there was some intent to think through, is there a better way to do it than what was going on? And I think they truly might have had some hope that the exchanges and what they did was going to have a positive impact. I really don't believe they thought they were going to screw it up as bad as it is now, from that standpoint. But I think there was the fallback that said, if it doesn't work, let's go to nationalized health insurance. And that's kind of where...
So you basically said the same thing I did, but said it in a much more diplomatic way.
Well, I'm trying to be diplomatic, you know, from that standpoint.
Hold on, Richard. We got to take a traffic break, and we're going to come right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth, talk about health insurance. Traffic.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
So we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Richard Silverstein, and his company does group medical insurance. How much premium do you write, Richard? How much do you guys?
I have no idea. We cover about 400 businesses ranging from 2 employees up to 10,000 employees.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
keeps us busy. We have about 54 people that focus on employee benefits every day.
And it's an unbelievably heavily regulated with all these new laws that you have to follow. I mean, I just think about the number of times your people come to my office or talk to somebody from my office just to try to keep my 20-person company straight, you know?
Our folks sometimes feel like they're lawyers today because you got to read the laws, interpret the laws, explain the laws to you, figure out how to take advantage of opportunities. So it's a moving target, and every week there's changes in the laws, there's tweaks, so it keeps us busy.
So during the break, a listener called in and asked, you know, there used to be Healthy Howard in Howard County, and if for some reason the ACA went away, would Healthy Howard come back? What do you think?
So we talked about that at the break. Ken Allman and folks in Howard County did a great job putting that in place. The problem is when the ACA makes changes, we don't know what those changes are going to be and whether they would allow that. You would think that under Trump care, they're going to allow for more free market, more opportunity. So something like Healthy Howard that they had before could come back. There used to be associations. There was the Restaurant Association. There was the Maryland Motor Truck. Those went away because of ACA. So a lot of things that were working well before, the ACA put that to the side.
So I'm not a personal fan of national health care in any way, shape, or form. But if I were president, I would pass national health care. So, and I think Trump is going to make a major mistake by not passing national health care, a basic average plan, like a Medicare type thing for everyone, that everyone in the country is assured to have some basic level of health care. And the reason I would do it is because I believe that national health care is inevitable in a democracy. All right. And I could go into all kinds of reasons for that. I may not like it, but it's inevitable. And if I let the Democrats do it, it's going to be an awful national health care plan for somebody who wants something better. If you do it now and you do it right, then people who want to do something different or better or add something to it, they'll be able to do it. But if not, you're going to be stuck with like a German style. I think German style is everybody gets the exact same. Whether you're Angela Merkel or the guy down the street, you all sit in the same line at the same. Well, Angela doesn't, but you know. Anyway, what do you think?
I think, in a sense, I don't know if we have the best health care in the world.
Are there people that argue with you on that?
Well, but I would say that.
I agree with you.
I say that in terms of the doctors, the hospitals, if you need care. I mean, I have a friend of mine whose son should have died, who just celebrated, 20 years of cancer-free. He was one of six situations at Hopkins, and it's amazing. And so people get access to great health care, right? You look at people at shock trauma and helicopters. I think the problem is that the medical system is a little broken right now, in the sense that I could get a $9,400 MRI, or I can get a CT scan, or I can get a $450 CT scan. There are drugs right now that are coming out. You read every day in the financial press. Drugs are being marked up to $89,000 for a certain drug, and then once it hits the press, then all of a sudden the drug manufacturer comes back and says, oh, now we're going to lower that cost. So the whole system screwed up. It's
well,
not
one
just
of,
on the
one
national
of the unique,
healthcare form.
One of the unique things of the American healthcare system that seems to be out of whack with the rest of the world is that about 90-some percent of all the medical bills that will be paid on your behalf, Richard, are going to happen in the last year or two of your life.
Right.
And that's not true in the rest of the world. And what I've seen medical institutions do and medical facilities do for people with, who are 90-some years old with Alzheimer's and, deteriorating in bed and keeping them alive for 6 months or 8 months more at outrageous amounts of money is unbelievable in our country.
Well, and I think part of that is because it's covered 100% and there's Medicare. And
it's very profitable.
Right. And and so I think what happens in other countries, that's more of a defined benefit, which is they basically say, what can we afford to provide these people? And somebody that's 88 years old, that has 6 months to live, well, we're not going to give them 24 months to live. I believe that there needs to be some form of national health insurance. Hard for me to say that, but for those that can't afford, regular health insurance.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the problem. And in many countries, people have the national health insurance, and if you want, you can buy up and get supplemental coverage. You can see the doctor whenever you want from that standpoint. But right now there's Medicaid, there's Medicare. But the problem is there's nothing affordable in Affordable Care Act for those that are middle income, from that standpoint.
Like you were saying, somebody who's making $30,000, $40,000 a year working for an employer about 35 years old, he can't be charged more than $200 or $300 a month. And, how's the employer going to come up with a plan for him?
Right, right. And what we see is families making over $88,000 family income, individuals over $44,000. If an employer offers coverage, that person can't go to the exchange. And if they go to the exchange, they might not get a subsidy. So there's a lot of people that are hurting in that middle income market that are paying a lot out of their paycheck and also paying a lot if they have care. And then you get those folks that also have kids that have ongoing medical needs, like really substantial issues. It's unaffordable.
Yeah. And the other crazy thing about it, and this is just, I'm an advisor, and clients come to me, and let's say they're 60 years old, and they've got 5 years to go before Medicare, and they're retired now, and their company didn't have retiree medical, and COBRA's going to run out before they get to Medicare. So what we do is we figure out how to control their taxable income and get them available for the premium tax credits.
Right.
And they get incredible health care for a couple $100 a month.
Right.
But yet they're worth $2-3 million.
Right, right.
I mean, that's the crazy thing about this law.
Well, the nice thing about...
But it's a good thing for me.
Right. But the nice thing about the American ingenuity is if the government creates a law, everybody figures out a way to work around the law to benefit that. And so
some people work around it a little too, a little too hard. You
right,
know what
right.
I'm saying? In
right.
other words, there are some doctors and people who take advantage of it, and it's downright fraud.
Right.
But there are plenty of people who can work around the laws, perfectly legitimate, perfectly legal, but the laws shouldn't have those kind of holes in there.
Well, I think your point is well taken, is that most people don't realize their advisors like you that they can see to help them understand how to benefit from a tax money standpoint from that standpoint. And many people just, health insurance is complex. I mean, it's complex for my folks that do it for a living.
I'm an expert.
Right.
And I can barely, I just went down to Sarasota to help clients who were 77.
Right.
So they had group insurance until they were 77. Now they're going on to Medicare. So, I've got a lot of issues of, I got to prove to Medicare that they were on credible coverage and all this. And I went down there to help them through it. And they, and this guy's he was the former IRS commissioner, Richard. And he looked at me at the end of this and he said, how the heck do any seniors do this?
They don't.
Without somebody like you walking them through it.
Right, right. And the thing is, there are people out there that, like you and others that specialize in that, that are really good for people to know that they should seek that out, from that standpoint. If they try to do it on their own, they're in trouble.
It's amazing, and it's ridiculously complicated. It shouldn't be that way. But it's interesting you say there should be some form of minimum coverage. It's kind of what I'm saying. There should be a basic governmental plan for everyone, and then everyone else who wants to can buy something more or additional. And I think that's the way it ought to be. I think that's the smart thing that Trump ought to do. He'd actually probably get the press off his back if he did something like that.
I don't think the press will ever be off his back.
But they would
I think
be lessened
right,
a little.
Right.
They would be lessened. The Democrats would actually like him for a minute or two.
Right. I think what they're going to do is look at high-risk pools. Think about auto insurance. If you're a really bad driver, you have high-risk pools. Otherwise, you have very much competition to get auto coverage wherever you want to go. From that standpoint, I think that's where the Republicans are looking, is how do we have more of a market market competition, but that for people that can't afford it, there's a safety net from that standpoint.
Okay, so when we come back, that's when we're going to talk about business planning, HRAs, HSAs, and all that. So get prepared.
Bring it on.
Right now, we got to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And in my opinion, we are talking about the most difficult and important personal financial topic, and that is medical insurance. What the heck do you do to try to keep up with this and not allow, not have a medical plan that's going to devastate you and devastate your family, or not have any, it's becoming a very complicated situation. Your premiums are skyrocketing, your deductibles are skyrocketing, and, it's an issue. We got Richard Silberstein, in my opinion, one of the best medical group insurance, what do you call yourselves, brokers?
Employee benefits consultants and brokers.
Employee benefit brokers and consultants, or consultants and brokers. Which one was it?
Well, in the smaller marketplace, we're sort of placing policies, and it's not as consultative, right?
Yeah.
In the larger market, there's a lot more consulting that goes on.
So, we're talking about HSAs, HRAs, and flexible. Let's define the three. Flexible spending. What the heck is that? And it's very different. They sound all alike, but they're very different.
Right. So most employers offer a flexible spending account today, which allows you to put aside money on a pre-tax basis. And if you don't use it, eventually you'll lose it. So what you don't want to do
is... Except for what? $500 now, if the plan allows
it. Right, depending on what the plan allows. And so we have a lot of clients that have employees that pay for deductibles, co-pays, out-of-pocket costs. And I might put aside $150 a month, so $1,800, and I need to make $2,700 if I were to have that $1,800 to pay. not by paying it pre-tax, tax leveraging from that standpoint. And then I can use that as I incur those expenses, get reimbursed on a pre-tax basis. So anybody that has an employer that has an FSA that you have out-of-pocket cost and that you can defer some money and still, you know, cover your living expenses, you should definitely do an FSA.
And, you know, and like you say, if you know you're going to be spending the money, it's probably best. But of all the three, it's the worst, in my opinion, the flexible spending account. It's horrible. I hate the thing. If I had an employee comes to me and says, well, I don't really think I got that much money to spend, I said, don't worry about it. It's a right. pain in the neck to work with. Okay.
Right.
The HRA right. is what? And you don't see this as often, but it is somewhat.
Well, we see this more in smaller employers, and we actually have an HSA and an HRA. So I'll give an example. We had an HSA where we gave employees $1,000, and as an example, one of my employees, and in the second month, I put $80 a month aside in her HSA, and she came in the third month and said, our health insurance sucks. She husband needed a $900 prescription. She only had $160 in the account, and with an HSA, it's only whatever's in the account. With an HRA, I could put aside $1,000 for that employee. They could use the $1,000 day one, right? So when she went to the pharmacy, she would have on her debit card $1,000 to use. But if she doesn't use the money, she doesn't get that money back. So an HRA is really, we see that more for people that are not going to fund money in an HSA, more where the company wants to help the employee sort of be more...
And the HRA is strictly employer-donated money.
Right, employer dollars.
Okay, so so the HRA is employer-donated dollars. If the employee doesn't use it, employer gets it back and then can use it again the next year if they want to fund it with their... But that's an employer thing. You don't see it a lot. You see it with small businesses where they want to help their employees help get over their deductibles.
Well, like you said, as your rates went up, you raised the deductible. So you said, hey, what would it be if I go from a $1,500 deductible to $2,000? I'm going to save X. You know what? I'll self-insure that for my employees because I know that they're not going to use all that money. So the HRA is attractive for people that might have lower income folks or people that might not have that cash flow to put money into an HSA.
Now, the HSA, that's the best. That's the
supercharged.
That's the golden one.
Right.
What's the HSA all about?
So the HSA is like a medical IRA. I can put money in pre-tax. If I'm an employer, I can put money in for my employees. So we have a lot of employers that say to employees, if you do certain things, if you're up to date on age-appropriate screenings, if you're a non-smoker, we're just going to fund some money in there for you. I can put my own money in. If I don't use it, I don't use it. It rolls over. I can use it for medical, dental, vision. It's pre-tax going in, tax-free coming out. And,
as long as you use it for medical.
As long as you use it for medical.
Now, you can let it sit also for, forever. And when you turn 65, if you want, you can even take it out like an IRA if you choose to.
Right. So we have many of our business owners that don't want to mess with the paperwork and also can't afford to just cover the bills. So they're putting in the money pre-tax, maxing out, and not even touching it because they know when they turn 65 – they know that they're going to need some money put aside to help cover, you know, medical expenses they might have after 65.
So, but the beauty of the HSA is not only so the employer can put the money in or the employee can put the money in.
Right.
You have a max limit of single is $3,350 for 16 and $6,700 for 16, I think.
Right.
And then the other beauty of it is, like you say, it's cumulative. If I don't spend a nickel of it, it stays there, and the next year I put more money in. But the other thing is if I use it, I don't have to go begging to somebody and show them my receipt. Please give me my money. I took it to the doctors. You know?
Right. Well, the nice thing is there's a lot of applications out or vendors out that administer HSAs where I can take a picture of the receipt with my cell phone. And then if I ever get audited, I just, you know, can show them that I here are all my expenses from that standpoint.
At the end of the year, you get a 1098 SA and it says, okay, you took $1,000 out of your HSA. Did you use it for medical bills? I say yes. and then my tax return goes in. If the IRS wants to question me on it, I have to show my receipts.
Right, right.
And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty straightforward and simple, right. And they rarely ever do it, to right. be honest with you.
Well, and the nice thing is if you, once you get over a certain amount of money in your HSA, with a lot of the folks that provide HSA, you know, administration, you can invest that money. So, you know, you can have that money growing tax deferred. You can let it roll.
Right.
Build up your nest egg from that yep. standpoint.
So, you know, Richard, I have a lot of small business owners who listen to me on the radio, and they come to see us and do the financial physical, and I look at their group health insurance, and I see that they don't have an HSA. They might have they might have an HRA, and I almost always say to them, why don't you have an HSA
right.
now? You know, because a small business employer can have a plan where the employee can either choose an HRA with a medical plan, or they can choose an HSA with
right.
their medical plan.
Right.
And so the employer should choose the HSA with the medical plan. I had a group of doctors. This was happening with them. They have a great plan. They fund the HRA to the max for the deductible on every employee, and they were doing it for themselves. And I'm like, what are you, crazy? Why don't you give the employees the HRA and then give yourselves an HSA? And when they looked at the numbers, they were like, you're right. This is ridiculous. Why aren't we doing that? Do you agree that?
I do, but the other thing I just want to point out for all your business owners out there is that if you're an LLC, an S-Corp, a partnership, you can't be in an HRA.
You're right.
Right? So we see it where somebody actually was in an HRA and they really shouldn't be, or they're not taking advantage of the HSA. So
the owner of those companies, the employees can be in
the
it.
Employees,
but
if you're more than a 2% stockholder, then you really can't be in that.
Yeah, it's no better.
So call Drew and get some good advice.
Well, this group of doctors were a C-Corp, so it worked for them very well.
Right, right.
But still, it didn't work for them. They should have been in an HSA.
Right. The other thing we see with those people that have HSAs is that it's your money, so they're better consumers of healthcare. So, you know, as we were talking about, they might look on GoodRx to say, is there a cheaper prescription? They might say, hey, I'm going to go to urgent care instead of go to the emergency room.
Also, if you build up $15,000, you can invest it.
Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're accumulating that tax-free, and when you turn 59 and a half, you can pull that out tax-free for medical expenses.
So, you know? I've got a good 20 plus in my HSA, and I can have 15, 20 of it invested if I want. I
right.
don't need to let it sit earning zero in a bank account.
Totally agree with you.
It's a great plan. People need to be looking at this. And anyway, we got to take our last pause of the night. The night's flown because we have such a great topic and a great guest. But right now, I got to go to traffic, and we'll be right back. Last quarter of Money, Riches, and Wealth. 75% of adults agree.
Thanks, Paula.
From advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com, drewtig.com, and follow us on Twitter at TheFinCon for educational updates.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
You know, they're definitely my favorite songs, but I guess I'm going to have to give you a couple new favorite songs so that... but this is one of my favorite. You could play this every week for me if you wanted. But I ought to give you a couple new songs in the future. Anyway, we're here with Richard Silverstein. And so tell people how they can get in touch with you if they need... assistance with group medical insurance.
Call 410-823-8066 or www.silbs.com and just give us a holler if you need any help. We're happy to help you out.
All right. Well, we'll repeat that before we finish up. But right now, we did have a caller call in and ask a question. So he's 65. He works at a university, and he's got great medical insurance, and he's going to continue to work, and he wants to know, can he just keep his medical, or does he have to go on Medicare?
So that is a great question, and the nice thing is that if you have more than 20 employees...
And that's very important.
Right. Your group plan is primary, and Medicare secondary. So,
and for, only Medicare A, he doesn't have to sign up for Medicare B.
Exactly what you would have to pay. So, so for this gentleman that called because he was with a university, a local university.
There aren't many universities that have less than 20 employees.
That's right. That's right. So he can stay on his plan. And I would highly recommend him staying on his plan because the university is subsidizing probably 80% of the cost. He can keep his excellent benefits. And then when he retires, if the university doesn't have any retiree benefits, that's where you would want to consult with somebody to help him figure out what supplemental options there are when he elects Medicare. But he has, I think, 60 days from when he retires to elect Medicare B and go through that process. I would recommend anybody planning on retiring 6 months before you retire is to really review your options and understand what those costs are, because with folks like Drew's firm, you want to figure out how that affects your budgeting, your post-retirement income from that standpoint, because it's sticker shock because your employer was paying 80%, and now you have to pay 100% of that supplemental cost.
So now let me give you a twist to the question, okay?
Uh-oh.
So in December of last year, we finally got the ability to now reimburse people tax-free for their medical insurance other than the group medical plan. Is that not correct? We couldn't do that
with small employers, yes.
With small employers.
Yes.
How big an employer, I guess, a big employer can't do that at all.
Well, the what they said is that small employers were dropping their health insurance right and left. I mean, the first year ACA came out, we had 100 small groups drop their health insurance. And so what the administration did in December was basically give small businesses the ability to set up an HRA to pay for premiums to help reimburse for individual health insurance.
It was considered illegal before that.
You couldn't do it.
You couldn't do it. If you did it, it was a non-deductible expense, and it could have caused all kinds of tax, hell, if you got caught.
Well, before ACA, you had the ability to do that,
yeah.
But then ACA made a HRA, a self-funded medical plan, subject to all sorts of regulations, and if you're a small business, you're like, don't want to deal with that.
See, but now here was my twist that I wanted to bring up, and that is I believe Medicare A, Medicare B, and a good Medigap policy is actually better coverage than most employers, almost any employer will offer. That's my opinion.
I think
it's 100% reimbursement on everything, and it's probably anywhere from 20 to 60% cheaper than most group plans would be.
I think I totally agree with you. Okay, from that
totally
standpoint.
Agree. Now totally you're coming agree. In with the diplomatic
but,
line.
But I think the difference is that an employer usually covers under benchmarking, employers cover roughly 72% of the cost for larger employers, right? Employers over 50, 100 employees. So the difference
yes.
is that I'm paying 100% of something versus
I understand.
I'm paying 26%.
So, but you're
pre-tax.
Talking about whether – now, the question, though, is can the employer reimburse you for your Medicare as opposed to putting you on group insurance?
No. So many of our clients say, well, can I just pay that guy to go on Medicare? And it is illegal to incentivize people to go on Medicare because – the government wants it covered by the employer from that standpoint. So now you could – we probably shouldn't talk about this on the air, but as an example, if somebody got
what
a bonus –
What the heck?
If somebody, what the heck? If somebody got a bonus, like if somebody got a bonus, that's different. We have had some employers say to that senior person, you know what? To be a full-time employee to get benefits, you have to work 30 hours, right? You're going to work 29 hours.
Right.
Like if you want to, you can work 29 hours. Now you're eligible for Medicare. And they work that out from that standpoint. Like as I said, there was ways around lots of things that are out there. But you need good advisors to figure that out.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, because, think about it. You've been working all your life paying into Medicare A. And now Medicare A is free for you. And Medicare B is relatively cheap, even if you hit the maximum IRMA surcharge. You know what the cost for a 65-year-old for full medical coverage, period, 100% coverage, you're talking about $600, $700 a month maximum.
Right.
You would put out full IRMA, good Medigap, Plan F, And even if you had to get the prescription plan, and Medicaid A is free,
right,
and it's 100% coverage, you're talking about $600-700 a month, and the typical person's only paying $300 a month who has under $170,000 of income.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, and the government forces you to stay on the group medical plan.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's in their advantage.
Well, because they're paying the tab for Medicare.
I understand why they're doing it.
Right.
I understand, and they're shafting the employees.
And Medicare is not going to be financially sustainable for long term.
Well, but, you know, that's their problem. They created the mess. You know, they don't ever solve messes. They just create messes,
well,
you know?
There might be some different messes getting solved in Washington. We'll see what happens with all the discussion
going on. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. So
it will be. I mean, I think the problem is until the problem gets fixed, you have these exchanges where carriers are dropping off of health plans, rates are going up by 20%, and the little guy, the individual, is getting squeezed.
One of the problems with medical insurance, like all insurance, is it's a state-by-state thing. Do you think the borders ought to be just ripped away and make it just strictly national health policies?
I think, like anything, you will see benefits from that, but you will see consequences from that. But if a big insurer came into Baltimore, like a Blues, and had below market rates compared to CareFirst, right, somebody might benefit from that. But if CareFirst is destabilized because they lose a lot of business, it's...
Which brings us to this, you know, you have this one medical insurance company, Evergreen, which was created by the Affordable Care Act, and it seemed to be a great plan, and now all of a sudden it got destabilized and itself. And
right.
So what's going on there to our listeners who have that coverage?
What's crazy is the government spent $8 billion for these co-ops, and now there's like 10 left from that standpoint. Evergreen has gone from not-for-profit to for-profit, and that's a whole other discussion, that they had lower costs, and they were doing well, but because of the way the ACA is structured, they were going to have to write, like, I think it was $25 million to, like, Blue Cross and, you know, into the fund. I believe that Peter Billenson is doing a good job there, and I believe that you know, that they're really trying to make a go of it.
Just had a private equity company pour some money into
it. Yeah, and I hope they survive long term. I think they're going to survive in the short term.
So we don't have a lot of time for this, but there is a kind of a online Oscar. Are you familiar with them? Google happened to be a partner
in
New York.
Right. I think the president's son-in-law's brother was an investor in that.
Yeah, and how's that doing? Are you familiar with it?
Losing lots of money.
Well, but they're a big, you know, they got big pockets behind them. But
right.
They are trying to be a disruptor to the medical insurance industry. I'm not sure where it's going to go, but it's interesting.
I think they're struggling, but at the platform, I think, is a good one. I think what we're going to see over the next couple of years is hospitals and health systems almost being like insurers in the marketplace. So.
Uh-huh.
You're going to see where they're going to come out and try to be direct to consumer and try to have lower cost options.
Tell everybody how to get in touch with Richard Silverstein, Silverstein Insurance.
Feel free to give us a call at 410-823-8066. We're located at the Quarry and love to help anybody that needs help.
Great. Well, Richard, we really appreciate you being here with us. Time flies when I have a great guest and a great topic. So
enjoy the discussion. Thank you very much.
So this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.